Hello everyone and welcome to my review for Matt Reeves' The Batman, 1 year later. It's been a while that I've been wanting to do this review and just haven't gotten around to it. Really, I have no, reason behind it, just haven't gotten around to it. I mean, because I didn't see it when it was in theaters a year ago, and this is going up on exactly the 1 year anniversary of when it was released. But yeah, I did not get to see it when it was in theaters, and here I am, finally giving my review as in-depth of a review as I possibly can give it, because I mean, I am not a professional movie critic. I just speak from the heart as I see it as a fan for the most part, but I also try to give as much of a technical, critique as well when it comes to certain things about films and television, as I have been doing with my Last of Us review. If you guys have checked that out, you hear me praising the production on that show a lot. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about The Batman. And of course, this is a film that, depending on who you talk to, with certain sections of the DC fan community, people praise it, people didn't like it. Like, one in particular that I remember is on Up Up Down Down, Tyler Breeze and Xavier Woods, that they had a whole back and forth of it, with Tyler Breeze hating the Batman, Xavier Woods praising it. And if you want to check it out, I don't remember which episode of Battle of the Brands that it was on, but just, check it out, the 2K22 Battle of the Brands GM mode, and it was actually a pretty intense little exchange between them. But yeah, go check that out. It stars Robert Pattinson and Paul Dano, Zoe Kravitz, Colin Farrell, Jeffrey Wright. Names are slipping me, I don't know why. Peter Sarsgaard, and why am I blanking out on his name? Why am I blanking out his name? John Turturro, yeah. Quite a good cast, a lot of big names, and a lot of established names featured here. Andy Serkis as Alfred, of course. Everyone in this film, in my opinion, gave great performances throughout. And much like how I felt about the Zack Snyder's Justice League, where that was a four-hour film, did not feel like 4 hours, this one is a near three-hour film, did not feel like 3 hours at all. The pacing, I felt, was very well done. And I would love to, I'm very curious to read what the full script is, because I have it bookmarked on the website that I usually check out for scripts to just browse around and get a good idea about that kind of stuff. So I'm curious to see what kind of stuff is on that script that, might not have been in the film or might have been altered for the film. But, I'm not going to give a whole rundown of the story because, my memory is just not that strong. But story was a very well done story. I mean, it's Batman in his second year as Batman, and I like that they did that, because I mean, it's kind of like the 89 Batman, where it's him, he's been Batman for a while. We don't know exactly the timeline, at least I don't recall them specifying what the timeline is from when he made his first appearance to where we are at the start of the film. But here in The Batman, it is established that this is 1 year he has been Batman, so we are in his second year. Now, we don't get an origin story, as we have gotten from so many other iterations. We got it in 89 with Michael Keaton and Tim Burton. We even got part of it in Batman Forever with Val Kilmer and Joel Schumacher. We got it in the Dark Knight trilogy in Batman Begins with Christian Bale and Christopher Nolan. Hell, we even got it in Batman vs. Superman in the opening credits with Ben Affleck's Batman, directed by Zack Snyder, seeing that origin of the Wayne family murders. That one is probably the most dramatically depicted that I've seen out of all the live action films. I'm glad that we didn't get that again in here, because we've seen it enough times. Just like I'm glad the MCU Spider-Man trilogy did not do another rehash of the Uncle Ben story, because we saw that twice already. We don't need to see it a third time. But one of the things I really loved about this film is that it takes elements of different stories, like The Long Halloween is one of them. Batman Year One is another one. I can't remember what the other, because I remember they had a little box set that DC Comics had released to coincide with The Batman. I think Batman Ego was the other one. But I like that they took the different elements from those stories to create this film that Matt Reeves wanted to tell this story. Again, I feel like it was beautifully done. I absolutely loved this film. I've seen it at least 4 or 5 times that I can recall. And the first time that I watched it, it was a bootleg copy, you know, somebody recording it from the theater. But it was a good enough copy that I was able to enjoy the film. And then, of course, when it went to HBO Max, I enjoyed it. And the Blu-ray and digital releases came out, I've been enjoying that too. And I don't know where I would rank it amongst the other live-action Batman films, but it is very close up there. Because, I mean, when I did my ranking of the Batman movies in 2019, I believe, where I talked for 2 hours about those Batman movies, that I had The Dark Knight as my number one. But every time that I've watched The Batman, it's like, I'm not sure if The Dark Knight is still my number one. It's inching up there. I'm not sure. I don't know, and maybe I need to give it one more watch just to know for sure. Robert Pattinson's performance as Batman and as Bruce Wayne were very well balanced, and physicality of it, and it's like you can tell that, yeah, he's, even though he's been doing this for a little while, you can tell that he's still learning how to be the Batman, and that's what I really like and appreciate about this story. That he is not the polished, perfect world's greatest detective that we know him to be. Because I remember that was one of the arguments that Tyler Breeze kept having, that he felt like he was a weak Batman, that he was clumsy and a lot of that stuff. But again, it's because he's still learning. He's not the perfect Batman that we expect him to be. And even so, looking at all the other Batman movies, you know, Michael Keaton, Val Kilmer, George Clooney, Christian Bale, Ben Affleck, as much as we enjoyed all of them, they were not perfect Batman either. And I don't mean in the performances were all great for what they were, but I mean like as the versions of Batman it wasn't the polished, perfect, world's greatest detective Batman rather, that there were still the little flaws within them. And because that's what it is, Batman is a flawed character, and that is part of the character. Not flawed as in he's a terrible character, just flawed as in he's human. And that is probably why a lot of people gravitate towards Batman more so than they do, you know, Superman and some of the other, you know, metahuman characters. And the other thing I really appreciate also is that we got to see him with the paint around his eyes, and they don't pretend that that's not there when he takes the mask off. No, it's still there, and I'm glad that they kept that there too. Because I think I even mentioned it when I did my script to screen of Batman Begins, that in the script that there was a moment where he still had the paint around his eyes and Alfred mentions it to him. But of course, we don't see that because, you know, especially in the worst version of it was in Batman Returns, when he takes the mask off at the end of the movie and it's that very quick, you know, when he takes the mask off and you see that the paint is no longer around his eyes. And it's, even as a kid, it was so jarring for me seeing that. But the best version of them pretending that the mask, that the paint is around the eyes, is when in Batman vs. Superman, when Batman gets out of the Batmobile after having his first interaction with Superman. He takes off the cowl. We don't see his face. He's going up the stairs. And then when he comes from the other side, it's Ben Affleck. Perfect clean face. No makeup around the eyes. But here, we don't pretend that the makeup is not there. It's there for all to see. Hell, we even see him putting it on during the opening montage, which is one of my favorite things, especially because the music, the great music by Michael Giacchino, and just especially in this part, the opening track for that scene it's called "You Can't Fight City Halloween," which, you know, Giacchino, he loves his punny titles for his songs. That's why I listen to the soundtrack very often, and that track in particular, other than the main Batman theme, I like this track in particular because it sets the tone for what the rest of the film is going to be. And then the opening narration of Pattinson, which we actually would find out it's him, basically what he writes in his journal from I'm trying to think of the right terminology, his escapades, I guess, during the night, you know, where he recounts everything so that, you know, he has a perfect recollection of everything that he's doing. And, you know, we that's the narration that we get in the opening of the film. Well, but the opening is we get the POV shot that we are made to believe that it's Batman, but it turns out it's Riddler watching the mayor, and that's a good introduction also, because you don't realize it's him until you get that quick little flash from the TV where you see Riddler in the mayor's mansion. And again, Paul Dano as the Riddler I thought was phenomenal, because Riddler is my favorite Batman villain out of all his entire rogues gallery. I know, I've dressed as the Joker a few times for Halloween, so people would expect Joker to be my favorite. But really, the Riddler is my favorite, because Riddler is a psychological villain, and Joker is too, but Joker also gets very physical. But Riddler, he's all psychology. He's not a physical fighter. He's a psychological fighter, and that's what I love about the character so much. Even though in this one he does get a little more physical, which I'm fine with that too, because he's not a perfect Riddler in this iteration. I mean, because the character of the Riddler has always been a narcissist, and he is a little bit in here too, but he's not the narcissist like he would be in, especially like in the Arkham games, how he's such a narcissist that he believes himself to be such a genius that there's no possible way anyone can be superior to him in even the slightest little way. In this version of the Riddler, he's very much like almost idolizes Batman in his methods. Because Batman fights, his whole thing is he's fighting the criminals and the corrupt of Gotham. And Riddler is trying to expose that in this film. Through digging the secrets of the Renewal Fund that has been such a thing in Gotham City for however many years of the story. Part of that is him killing all these specific people that were involved in the Renewal, calling out Batman specifically as his inspiration. And then when they had that little meeting in prison, that's where they get that moment where Riddler is kind of professing his adulation for Batman and his wanting them to be partners in all of this. And then of course it all goes to shit, because Batman is not about that life. He's about justice. That's when we get the awesome little sequence later on in the film, when Riddler's ultimate plan to flood Gotham City by, destroying the dams and that's keeping the water out of Gotham City, basically, and just flooding the entire city and everything's going to shit. And I love that that's actually going to be a very big point in the Penguin TV series, because I think Colin Farrell said in an interview that in the opening of the first script, for the first episode one, he's walking through Falcone's old office and there's still water all over the carpet. And then also that when the Batman Part 2 comes out in a few years, that's supposed to jump off of right from where the Penguin show ends. And I like that they're going to have that continuity and connective tissue between the films and the TV show for that. And also like the way Riddler kills these people in this film, I wonder if the Saw movies exist as canon in these films, because his kills are very much like a Saw trap, especially the one that he gets Gil Coulson, I think that's the name, played by Peter Sarsgaard, the attorney, the district attorney of Gotham City in this film, because he has like a bomb around his neck and he has to answer these three riddles correctly, and he'll give him the password to to kill the detonation on the thing. It's like all of these are like very much like Saw traps, and especially like when he gets the police commissioner, another thing there where he has like a whole contraption over his head too. It just makes me wonder, did he see the Saw films and get inspiration? And the other thing also I really like about this film is the chemistry that Pattinson's Batman has with Jeffrey Wright's Commissioner Gordon, because I think the first thing that I even said after I saw the Batman the first time that I felt like Jeffrey Wright's Jim Gordon was my favorite version of Jim Gordon. And every time I've seen it since then, I feel more and more inclined to believe that, he is my favorite Jim Gordon. And I'm excited to see him as Commissioner Gordon going forward. Jeffrey Wright's just a good actor in general. I mean, loved him on Westworld and everything else I've seen him in, especially Westworld. But I really enjoyed him as Commissioner Gordon here. Well, he's still Lieutenant Gordon. He's not Commissioner Gordon yet. And he probably will be by part two of the Batman, so we'll see. Because I'm pretty sure he'll be involved on the Penguin TV series, but we don't know the full details of it just yet, so we'll find out what's going to go on with that. And Andy Serkis as Alfred was a great Alfred. Really, we've never had a bad Alfred in any version of Batman, whether it's animation or live action. But live action, we have We have Alan Napier from the Adam West series, then Michael Goff from the Tim Burton and Joel Schumacher films, Michael Caine in the Dark Knight trilogy, Jeremy Irons in Batman vs. Superman and Zack Snyder's Justice League, and then Andy Serkis here. I can never remember what his name is, but the one from on the show Gotham was also a very good Alfred. But yeah, we've had all these great actors playing Alfred. And the thing that I also have really loved, and I was thinking about this recently just walking to and from work, how one of the things that I love out of every version of Batman's story and his relationship with Alfred is how Alfred is always longing for him to have a life beyond Batman, you know, no pun intended, to just not be Batman anymore and have that solid life of a wife, couple of kids, you know, whatever, and just have a normal life. But Bruce, stubborn as he is, he cannot have a normal life because Batman is his life. And that's especially like in the Batman the Animated Series. That's one of the things also I really love, how apparent that Batman is his true identity and Bruce Wayne is the alter ego, is the costume that he puts on, play the part and to the rest of the world. And that's pretty much how he is doing it here too. And because in this version, Bruce is kind of a recluse. He's not in the public eye like he was in other versions of Bruce Wayne in the other Batman films and Batman vs. Superman and so on. So people don't really get to see him that often. So it's not this, so in this world that they exist in with Gotham, that fact of that he's not as public of a figure as he has been in other iterations, it makes it a little more believable. Like, yeah, how would anyone be able to put two and two together that Bruce Wayne and Batman are the same person? Whereas in other versions, I mean, especially in Batman and Robin, where he doesn't even try to discard his voice at all. It's like, yeah, of course, that's Bruce Wayne, that's Batman. But in this version, it makes it a little harder for them to make that connection, and I love that. And then again, the relationship that him and that Pattinson's Bruce Wayne and Andy Serkis's Alfred have, like I said, there's never been a bad performance of Alfred, and every version of Bruce Wayne and Alfred in these films and TV shows have just been such a perfectly done relationship and chemistry from everybody. I mean, Michael Goff had great chemistry with Michael Keaton and Val Kilmer and George Clooney, Michael Caine and Christian Bale had phenomenal chemistry as well. Ben Affleck and Jeremy Irons have great chemistry. You know, Adam West and Alan Napier, great chemistry. I mean, they had so many years together. And Andy Serkis and Robert Pattinson have great chemistry too. And I'm looking forward to seeing even more of that in the Batman Part 2, because I'm certain that we're going to get a lot more of Alfred in this version, because in this film, part of why, you know, Andy Serkis isn't as present in this film is because, one, COVID lockdowns happened, and two, he was also still very much involved with the, you know, Venom Let There Be Carnage, because he was the director of that. And that's the other amazing thing, that the fact that this film took almost 2 years to complete because of COVID, because if the lockdowns had not happened in 2020, this film would have come out in June of 2021 like it originally was supposed to, you know, because they started production in February of 2020, then lockdowns hit, they got delayed until like late summer, early autumn of 2020, and finally got, you know, picked back up on that, and then it was going to be released in October of 2021, but then they pushed it to March 4th of 2022, and you know what, I'm glad that they delayed it as much as they did, because they were able to perfect the story that they were able to tell in this film, and also the production value, like the set designs, and the fact, you know, that they utilized the technology of the volume to recreate the backgrounds of Gotham City that looked so beautiful and flawless that you can't even tell that it's just a screen when you're watching a lot of these scenes. And because I had no idea that they used the volume until I was watching the behind the scenes stuff when the 4K Blu-ray came out, how much care that they put into that to make it look like they were in a real city when it was just a green screen, basically, is amazing to me. But it just shows how, because I know there's people that are very much practical over CGI, but this kind of shows you having that technology, when utilized in the best ways, can be a great asset. And yeah, I love practical effects too, but sometimes practical effects can be a little wonky, you know. Just look at some of the, you know, stuff from the original Star Wars trilogy, the unedited versions, the non-special edition versions of, you can, some of that stuff can, it doesn't really age well, really. And but we still love those films anyway. The great job that they had of creating this atmosphere of Gotham City, this look of Gotham City that very much feels like this is a Gotham City that could exist. You know, it's not like how in the Dark Knight trilogy, especially in Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises, where you see the city of Gotham City, but it's like, oh, that's Chicago, you know? But in here, you see the architecture and the buildings and everything, and it's like, yeah, that's Gotham City. You know, I don't look at it and see, oh no, that's New York, or no, that's Chicago, no. Like, I look at that, and it's like, no, that's Gotham City, and I love that. I'm just curious to see, like, how much of that they're going to be able to reproduce for on the Penguin series, which I think they're actually supposed to start production within the next few weeks, if they haven't already. And then, of course, there's, you know, when they get started on the Batman Part 2, which I think that comes out in 2025, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I believe it's 2025 when that comes out, and which I'm very much looking forward to that. And yeah, it's kind of funny just how it was almost a full decade between solo live-action Batman movies, because the last one before this film was The Dark Knight Rises in 2012, and then we get The Batman in 2022, so it's almost a full decade, because The Dark Knight Rises was July 2012, The Batman, March 2022, so it's just about 4 months off from being a full decade between films. And because, yeah, we had Batman vs. Superman and Zack Snyder's Justice League in between, so we had those two versions of Batman in there, but they were not solo Batman films. So it was almost a full decade in between films. But, you know, there's people, you know, include myself included, that consider Batman vs. Superman a Batman movie, because it is half his film, basically. But what Robert Pattinson and team were able to accomplish here, and then it's, and also going back again to chemistry, the chemistry that him and Zoe Kravitz had, I mean, she was a phenomenal Selina Kyle, Catwoman. I loved her performance here. And Colin Farrell as Oswald the Penguin, phenomenal job in the makeup and prosthetics team to make him look the way he looked. I mean, you know, let me look up real quick if they got nominated for hair and makeup, because they did a phenomenal job. Let me see, Oscars 2023 nominations. Let me look at that. Yeah, because I really have no idea, honestly, if they got a nomination for that. But if they didn't, then that's a travesty. Let me look through here. Where is it? Colin Farrell got nominated for Banshees of Inisherin. I think that's how it's pronounced. How about I adapt that? All right. The Batman is nominated for Best Visual Effects. They're probably not going to win because they're up against Avatar and Black Panther and Top Gun Maverick. So, yeah. Chances are they're not going to win. But if they do win, that'd be awesome. And but still, it is pretty cool that they at least got some Oscar nominations there. Freaking Avatar. But anyways. I hope that this is a decent enough movie review, honestly. Because I don't know if I'm doing a good enough job. But again, I've never pretended to be a professional. So I'm just speaking when I speak. And the Batmobile, I thought was really good as well. I like that it was an actual car. Kind of reminiscent of Adam West Batman, where his is basically just like a car, like a styled up car. And this one is a styled up muscle car. And I remember seeing all the memes from the pictures of people like, oh, it looks like just Fast and Furious, whatever. And like, okay, sure. You know, if that's where your mind goes to when you just see a fast muscle car. But man, I appreciated that it was just an actual car that they used as the Batmobile, because it's very reminiscent of the original versions of Batman from the old movie serials of the 40s, and then even the original comic books, where it was just a regular car that he was driving around. You know, he didn't have the stylized Batmobile that we would, you know, come to know and expect from Batman. I mean, it certainly wasn't like the Adam West Batmobile or the Michael Keaton Batmobile, especially the, you know, Val Kilmer and George Clooney Batmobiles, but those were very super stylized. It was not a tank like Bale's and Ben Affleck's version. I thought it was a pretty cool one. And the sequence that they had on the bridge when he's chasing down the Penguin was a really good one too. And that's another one where the music was very, very, very atmospheric. And that's another one, whenever I listen to it, especially like the part where it kind of has like a little bell-ish kind of sound, very reminiscent of, for me, of the 89 score when Joker shoots down the Batwing, and you hear the ding, 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 you know, and it's kind of like a little section of the music and what plays during the Batmobile chase that kind of reminds me of that. And oh yeah, we also have a Barry Keoghan, or Keegan, I don't know how it's pronounced, where there's the deleted scene of him as the Joker, but there's also the scene of him at the end of the Batman, where you hear him chatting with the Riddler, because Riddler is so angry and distraught and emotional over his plan just failing. They kind of form a little bond right there, and makes me wonder how much of his Joker that we're going to get in the sequel. And I've seen a lot of people that they're hoping they're not going to follow the whole Joker is going to be the next villain kind of thing, which I'm in that same boat too. You can have him there, you can have him exist, but don't make him the villain, because I want to see more of the rogues gallery that we haven't seen in live action films. Like, I would love to see, you know, a version of, you know, like the Court of Owls, or even a version of Mr. Freeze that's, you know, a little more dramatic and not so over the top like Arnold Schwarzenegger's version was. Because, you know, if you've seen, you know, Batman the Animated Series and watched the Heart of Ice episode, they can do a version of that in live action, really. But we shall see, because we don't know what Matt Reeves has in mind for the Bat universe that he's crafting right now. And so we'll just have to wait and see how that goes. Yeah, I guess that's gonna do it for this review, because I really don't know what else to say at this point. I feel like I've said everything I needed to say or wanted to say, but nothing else is coming to my mind right now. And let me know what you all think of the Batman. If you loved it, if you hated it, you know, share your reasons why you didn't like it so much, you know. Because I know there's a lot of people out there that hated it because they're in the camp of make the Batfleck movie. And then there's others that praise it blindly because they are, you know, anti-Snyderverse and all that other fun stuff. And I also love how that James Gunn has already said that this is going to exist in its own little Elseworlds section of the DC Universe. And then DC Universe, they're going to have their Batman Brave and the Bold story, you know, coming out in whatever time that they finally make the movie. Which, if the rumors are true that Ben Affleck is in line to direct it, that's going to be awesome, because, you know, whatever your feelings are of Ben Affleck as an actor and his version of Batman, when Ben Affleck is in the director's chair, he can, you know, put out some pretty damn good movies. So if he is going to direct it, I look forward to seeing what he does from behind the camera for a Batman movie. Thank you all so much for watching, for listening, for subscribing, and if you're not subscribed, please do so. YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, all that stuff in the link in the description for this little show. And you can also chat me up on my social media, my Twitter, my Instagram, my Vero, Snapchat, TikTok, if you want to check out the fun stuff I post on there sometimes, even though the last few videos is just me promoting my YouTube content. But and also check out my Minotites podcast store if you'd like to support me financially there too. And again, thank you all so much for watching, for listening. I love and appreciate every single one of you too. I truly and genuinely do, and hope you all are doing well, staying safe, taking care of yourselves and your loved ones, and being the awesome, wonderful people that I know you all are, and that you all can be, and will continue to be. So, this has been my review of The Batman. I am Julian, and I will see all of you on the next.